This is HPR episode 2381 entitled Benefits of a Tabletop. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 44 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Klaatu talks about the benefits of analog gaming.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
You're listening to Hacker Public Radio. This is an entry into my mini series on tabletop gaming, and I wanted to talk a little bit about tabletop RPGs specifically, because I've started to talk about tabletop RPGs a little bit in previous episodes. I think mostly I was kind of talking about them in relation to the Pathfinder Adventure card game, which, because it was based on an RPG, it kind of flirts with RPG, but also like the books and the solo adventures that I was talking about. Those are flat-out RPG. But I do want to talk a little bit about multiplayer RPGs, tabletop RPGs, the kind of the traditional ones that you might see on TV or in movies, where a bunch of stereotypically geeky people sit around and do that stereotypical thing of playing Dungeons and Dragons. And of course, it's the typical media representation of niche geek culture. It you know, doesn't quite hit the mark all the time, and it's a little bit like what? Why are they doing that? And I mean, you can argue about, well, they could do it that way, even though no one does. But I mean, you know, just like when we as geeks see silly cop shows on TV doing, you know, hacking things, and oh my gosh, you know, unplug your computer before the virus gets in or whatever. That's kind of the same deal with I think most representations of Dungeons and Dragons or whatever it is on television. So if that's your experience with Dungeons and Dragons, then just kind of forget about it, because that's probably not accurate. And I do want to talk about them, but before I talk about them, I wanted to do this episode and just talk about why they're so great, why tabletop RPGs are actually something, if you're not into already, maybe you should look into, maybe you should check them out, because they're a lot of fun, actually. And in fact, I want you to give me, I don't know, 30 minutes, I probably can't do it in 30 minutes, 45 minutes, I'm going to convince you that tabletop RPGs are superior, a superior gaming experience than, for instance, PC gaming. It's a tough sell, believe me, I know this because I've been there, but I want to try it, I want to give it a go anyway. So the first point that I want to make is endless possibilities, boundless narrative. By this I mean, in a PC game, you go to a town or a village, you see 10 houses, there's 5 houses that are just set pieces. You can't interact with them in any way, they're just there for set design, essentially. And then there's 3 houses, and you can go into all 3 houses, all of these, you know, these 3 houses, and you can go in and you see obligatory NPC, obligatory NPC bed, obligatory NPC barrel, and obligatory NPC writing desk. You can interact with the NPC. They'll say basically, all 3 of them will basically say the same thing. They'll say something about, you know, something that broadly applies to the plot line. Not too closely, but it's kind of within the same neighborhood. Maybe you can loot their desk, and guess what? The desk will have a useless piece of paper or a quill in it. 50-50 chance each desk. You can smash a crate. Maybe you'll find an apple in there or something. Maybe under the mattress, maybe you'll find up to 3 silver pieces. You'll leave, go to the next house, and same deal, same exact situation. Bed, writing desk, crate, NPC who says basically the same thing. So you do that 3 times. And then the final 2 houses, 1 house, you go in, an assassin tries to kill you. You kill the assassin, you find a note on their body. It's from some nebulous bad guy in a faraway land that you're free to go seek revenge on. You go into the other house, you find someone who's distressed, and they have a quest for you to go on, and you could certainly take that and go in the other direction and take that quest instead. And to the PC gamer, this is huge, this is big, this is an immersive world. They've got two completely separate choices, so they've got like free will. It's basically like real life. They've got three houses they can go into and rummage around and find paper or a quill or an apple. It's, again, like real life. And then you've got five set pieces. They're houses. They're not important. It's a little trade-off that we make. You know, we just assume that those are houses that hold absolutely no interest for us, so we can't go in. Not a problem. We can. There are lots of houses in my neighborhood that I don't go inside. It's basically, again, real life. That's a PC game. In the tabletop RPG experience, all 10 houses are open for you. Seriously, that's the difference. You could go into, I mean, sure, there are two houses that actually have plot points. That remains the same. There's the person in distress, and there's the person who tries to kill you and has a, you know, implies another quest. And maybe that stuff is written in the book that you bought from the store, from the gaming store, the actual book that your DM is reading through from and kind of planning out the adventure to in accordance with this book. That's pretty standard. Those three houses, though, that are open, they don't have to have NPCs that all say the same thing. Those NPCs can have completely different life stories. They could each have a quest for you. They could give you an item that leads you to one of the other quests for the other houses, or they could give you a great weapon that could help you later on down the line. They might just turn into some good friends who you can come back to if you get hurt, and they can help bandage your wound. They could have information for you if you get confused or lost along the way and need a tip. Anything could happen with those three NPCs. No longer are they people who just who tritely repeat the same phrase over and over again every time you do the dialogue thing with. They're people with personalities, and they can be whatever personality your DM invents. But that's not all. There are still those other five houses, right? And in the other game, in the PC game, they're literal set pieces. They're just set decoration. In this game, they're open for business, and in fact, there aren't just five houses. There are 50 other houses. There are as many houses as you want there to be, and you can go into any of them, or at least you can try, and that's where tabletop gaming becomes kind of interesting, because now you can say, okay, hey, I know that I've been into these two houses, so I've got a pretty good lead on the two quests that I feel this game is probably really about. I've been into the three other houses, and I've made some new friends, and they've kind of mentioned that they might have some quests as well. And the really cool thing about that, I should say, so for those three houses with the NPCs who might be interesting and might be friendly or might not, well, that's one thing. They might not be friendly. They might get angry at you. You've just walked into their house. What are you doing? Get out. And if you persist, maybe they'll attack you, and now you're in combat. Maybe they'll call the city watch, and now you're under arrest, and you have this new quest that suddenly got plopped into your lap, which is get yourself out of jail, and maybe do something to win the trust of the townspeople back so that you can go on their quests and actually complete the story. But there's also this possibility of, I mean, if you really wanted it, like if you really wanted to push it, you could say, hey, look, I don't care about these two other quests. I want to help Bob here in this house, and I want to find his long lost, you know, I want to go on his quest for whatever he's telling me he needs. Well, if that's not in the book, your DM could, or you could, go download or purchase or whatever, or invent off the top of the DM's head, a new adventure, a completely different adventure for you to go on to. It doesn't have to be the one in that particular book. So, sure, you could be playing through this book, but you could find a mini adventure somewhere online and play through that on a lark, because Bob the farmer has a quest that you wanted him to give you, and so he gave you something. And so now it turns out he's got a long-lost uncle up in the hills who is being attacked by hill goblins and hill trolls, and you need to go and rescue him. It has nothing to do with the main storyline, but you went into his house, you asked him what you could do for him, and that's what he told you. And because there are so many books out there of pre-written adventures, plus you've got your DM who has probably a limitless imagination. That's kind of why people end up being a DM, because they've got too much imagination for one person. So anything can become a quest. Okay, so back to these five houses, except there aren't only five houses, there are 50 houses, and they're all set pieces. Once again, maybe you've already played the. You've played Bob the Farmer's quest, and then you've gone and you've tracked down the assassin's boss, you've killed him, and you've gone to this person who was in distress, and you've helped them find their life destiny, and you've conquered the entire game, you've played through the whole book. You go back to the town, and you think, you know what? I've always been curious as to what is in house number 8. And so you go up to house number 8 and you say, "Hey DM, I'm going to go into this house. Is the door locked?" And the DM doesn't know because it's not in the book and you've already played through the book and you even he already had to pull out another adventure to send you on Bob the Farmer's quest. So at this point, no clue what is in house number 8. So is the door locked? Well, the DM can decide, well, okay, evens will say is no, and odds are yes. So I'll just roll a die here. I got a 3. So yes, the door is locked. Okay, well, that's cool. I happen to be a thief, maybe. So I will try to pick the lock. I pick the lock, and I actually literally just rolled a natural 20. That's actually pretty good. So yes, well, I mean, that is as good as a 20-sided die can roll, right? So yes, I can pick the lock and I get inside. So now I'm inside. Well, what's the story of this house? So again, the DM has to invent this stuff, but the DM could also just rely on either a purchased book of, something that maybe will lead you on a new quest, or maybe they'll just roll some die and refer to like a big master list of ideas. And well, yeah, who lives in this house? I don't know. Let's roll a die and find out. I rolled a 7. I look on my DM cheat sheet. 7. A wizard. A wizard used to live in this house. He's dead now. And this has been shuttered up and closed up for years, but there's a bunch of dusty potion bottles out in the off in the back room. So maybe you look through those and who knows what you find. Or maybe it's not a wizard. Maybe I rolled a 2 and I look at my chart and it's a knight. A knight used to live here. He's not living here anymore. He's dead. But there's a bunch of weapons in the back room. Or maybe none of those things are true. Maybe it was a front. Maybe a den of thieves used to camp out there. And that'll lead you to a completely new adventure to uncovering a thieves guild that needs to be brought to justice. The what I'm trying to convey here is that the possibilities are literally limitless, and it is only bound by the imagination of the DM, it is bound by your imagination, and it is bound by the availability of extra content, which, believe me, there's a whole lot of. So that's the main thing. I think that's the killer feature of tabletop RPGs, is that the narrative does not need to be, there are no constraints placed on the narrative. It can just go on and on for as long as it wants, in whatever direction it needs to. It doesn't really matter. Now that kind of sounds just like a big open sloppy world, and there's no point to it, right? It's just kind of like, well, that's not a game. That's just a map where you're giving a story to everything that you point to, pretty much at random. And so that's on one hand, that's a killer feature, and then on the other hand, it's kind of like totally useless, right? Because I mean, if that's what you're going to do, then you're no longer really playing a game. You're just playing a bunch of games based on one map. So let's step away from that for a moment. Talk about something related but not the same. It's flexibility in the narrative. So the narrative can be very, very flexible in a tabletop RPG because, yeah, sure, you've purchased this book, or the DM has written an adventure that he wants to take you down, to take you on. Well, in that adventure, in that story that they've written, or I hesitate to call it a story because that does imply a certain order and sequence of events. So in this adventure, there are certain plot points that maybe need to happen in order for you to be presented with a problem, discover the steps toward the solution, and then make the solution happen. That's kind of the logical progression of an adventure, right? That's the puzzle that you have to put together. So there are these things that you need to achieve, and maybe some of them are a little bit flexible. You can do it. Maybe you don't do it, it doesn't really matter. You could always find the same information out from some random drunkard in a tavern. who maybe used to run around with a den of thieves and is now at the bottom of the barrel, but spills his guts and tells you everything, or whatever. I don't know, whatever might happen. It doesn't, in other words, you don't need to show up to this one place at a certain time in order for something to be passed on to you. You could find it out in many other ways. But related to that would be the fact that items don't, I mean, and that's similar in a PC game. There's a lot of flexibility in timing and placement and stuff, but in a tabletop RPG, it's even more flexible. So let's say there's a gemstone that you absolutely have to get to in order for the rest of the story to logically make sense. Like the story could not progress if you don't find this one specific gemstone. Like that's just your character needs to find it in order for the DM to sort of move on to the next plot point. So it's been established maybe that the gemstone lives in a temple on the high road. You happen to come to a fork in the road, and there's a road that leads to the low road, and there's a road that goes along the high road. You, for whatever reason, decide to go on the low road. I don't know why you would decide that. I mean, you already know where you need to go. You know that there's a temple there. You know it's on the high road. For whatever reason, you want to go on the low road. Maybe you have some reason to suspect that something on the low road is going to be of interest to you. Maybe you're just being belligerent. I don't know. So you do that. The DM decides, well, the player doesn't know this, but I know this, and they really need to find this gemstone before anything interesting can happen, because it won't make sense without it. So suddenly you're going down the low road. Well, maybe you stop and you decide, I'm going to go fishing for a little bit, because my character would be hungry by now, and they're out of rations, so they're going to fish. Guess what you pull out of the river? A fish. Guess what's inside the fish when you slice it open to start cooking it up? A gemstone. Why is the gemstone that was supposed to be in the temple in a fish in the river? I don't know. We'll invent a backstory. Maybe, again, a group of thieves stole it from the temple, panicked, had to throw it in the river while making their getaway. Or maybe you don't find it in the belly of a fish. Maybe you're walking on the low road and get jumped by a bunch of brigands. You defeat the brigands and find, when you're looting their horribly mangled and dead bodies, a gemstone. Wait, why did they have the gemstone that was living in the temple? Well, they took it from the gemstone. Maybe you find it in the hollow of a tree. Why is it there? Because some apprentice from the temple was walking down the road and absentmindedly took the gemstone with them, and then absentmindedly stuck it in a hollow of a tree for safekeeping, and then forgot that it was there. I don't know. Point being, you can invent all kinds of reasons and rationale for plot points to move around within the game world. Super, super flexible. People don't necessarily need to follow a prescribed story in order to follow a prescribed sequence of plot points. And I've never seen a PC game that can do that. I've seen PC games that are pretty darn flexible. I've definitely seen some that can work in plot points in a lot of different settings. But I've never seen something that could just change everything about a plot point. Who gives it to you, who delivers it to you, why that plot point was even in the place that you found it or that you encountered it. Everything can be different in an RPG, a tabletop RPG. And that leads me to my third point about tabletop RPGs, which is replayability. The replayability of an RPG module or an adventure or a campaign, whatever, is, I would say, unparalleled. It's just completely mind-blowing. PC games, there are some PC games I've really liked in the past, and I have replayed them not so much for the variety and story. I mean, some of the games that I've replayed the most have absolutely zero variation in story, and I just play them because I like being in that world. It's a fun world. It's got a lot of character. Maybe it's got a really good soundtrack, like not a great setting. The world itself is nice. So I've played through games that don't have narrative flexibility or variety at all, but I've also played games that do have a lot of sort of variation in their story. But even in those games that tend to be very, very flexible, there's a certain point at which you start seeing, how even these different paths have to converge at some point. And in a tabletop RPG, you'll be amazed. You would just be absolutely amazed at how the stories can be so completely different from one another. I mean, there have been I have played and then I've sat in on some parts of an adventure for Dungeons and Dragons that was, I mean, it was the same adventure, right? I mean, it was the same book. Both gaming groups purchased the same physical book, and you would never have known it. I mean, other than the fact that location names and character names are the same, completely different stories. It was just amazing. I mean, people who you thought, you know, if you play it for the first time, you're thinking, well, this character in the story is clearly kind of a fixed point in the story, right? They can't change. They can't that the story depends upon them ultimately. And then next thing you know, they die in the next, you know, when your friend in your friend's game, in your friend's version of this story, that all important character just gets slaughtered by some evil force, and you think, well, now the story's broken, like it can't continue, and yet it does. It keeps going because it's that flexible. There's that much flexibility in something where a human brain can make adjustments, and I've never seen that kind of replayability in a PC game, and I just don't see how it would really work. I mean, sure, you could have an open sandbox type of thing where players are just supposed to sort of create their own adventure out of being in the world, but that's not the same thing. Like the replayability of literally the exact same story over the course of several different gaming groups over this, you know, over just repeating the same book, it's astonishing how different it can be in the hands of either a DM with an unlimited imagination, or players who just decide to play it in a different style. Like this time I'm gonna be a tank instead of a rogue, and that's just how I'm gonna play it, and we'll see what happens. And that's what it is. It's just you can just see what happens and learn about, you know, kind of like how the world reacts to your input. And that, my friends, is point number four, I think, is what I'm on right now. The reality and the realization that a tabletop RPG is basically a simulation. That's what it is. It's a world with a set of rules, and that's pretty much static, right? That there's a set of rules, and that's your basis for all of your data. And then you give numbers to sets of input, and you just start throwing stuff into this simulation. Like you give a certain set of numbers to this player, and that's their stats, and it's how well it's a bonus on how well they can do certain tasks, like picking a lock. And then when someone wants to actually pick a lock, they have to roll a die. And if that die today comes up with a one, even with their bonus, that's pretty bad. And if it tomorrow, if it comes up 20, that's really, really good. How does the world react to those two situations? It's amazing to find out. It's really, really fun to see how to just poke and prod this little simulated environment and to throw random stuff at it. And the random stuff is, as I have said, it's limitless. There's no end to what you can try to poke and prod, because everything in this environment will be assigned some kind of threshold. And if your character, between a random dice roll and whatever kind of fancy bonuses you have assigned to yourself, and maybe whatever fancy items that you have found that maybe give you additional bonuses, like the sum of all that combined with whatever simulation has been set up, it's completely unexpected, and all kinds of things can happen. I mean, like my example with trying to get into a house with a locked door. Like, do you get in? Yeah, maybe you do. And then there's this whole possible world that you can explore inside that house, and who knows what's going to be there? Half the time, the DM doesn't even know, because they're just going to roll some dice against against a table of items that you might find in a house. You know, I mean, that simple. And then even then, you would have to choose which table it is based on what kind of character would live in a house. But what if you didn't get in? What if you rolled a one and you broke your lockpick off in the lock of the door, and then the city guard comes by? Now what? Now you have to fight the city guard, or maybe you submit and you're under arrest, and now you have to get out of prison. You know, and there's everything leads to some kind of, half the time, unexpected result. And so if you like simulations, there's really almost nothing better than simulation through imagination. It is completely wacky and unexpected. You never know what you're going to run into, especially when when you get like a quirky idea of, well, let's do this right now. Let's just try this one thing that we would have never thought to do. Like it could be even something minuscule, like throwing a copper piece into a wishing well. Who knows what's going to happen there? I mean, and it's all going to get determined by either the DM or maybe a dice roll or another player or the world itself. If there's something written in the book that says, oh, by the way, this is a magical wishing well and these things might happen if someone interacts with it, there's that possibility too. But what good is it if it's a simulation if you don't get to see the working parts, right? So this is my fifth point about tabletop RPGs, and it's I guess probably the nerdiest thing, but I mean it's fully transparent. It's a fully exposed probability process. So unlike in most PC games and early RPGs like Baldur's Gate or something like that, they did a little bit better at this, but more recent ones kind of throw that out. And even Baldur's Gate, I would argue, didn't do this 100%. Like, it didn't quite achieve this goal, because I don't know if it really translates all that well to the computer anyway. But here's what I'm trying to get to, is that in a tabletop simulation, or, I mean, RPG game, you get to see all of the inputs and outputs. Like, you can see it all working together. I mean, you don't always see the stuff in the book. Like if your DM is reading from a purchased or pre-written, you know, adventure, and even if not, I mean, like presumably there's a rule book, right? There's something defining the setting, the simulation, the base world for the simulation. So you're someone's reading out of a book to figure out, well, how powerful is this monster? What kind of resistance do they have? What kind of armor do they have? Like, is their skin especially thick and cannot be hurt by normal blades? Are they a skeleton and they have no blades, so poking at them, or no flesh, so poking at them doesn't really do a whole lot? Maybe you need to bludgeon them with something big and heavy instead. So there's something defining that amount, you know, that side of the equation. And maybe you don't see that right away. Although maybe you've been playing a long time and you kind of know this stuff already. You think to yourself, oh, that's an animated skeleton, so me poking at it with a rapier is not really going to do a whole lot of good, and I can figure this out. So there's some sense of there being the world that you're living in. But then your input you get to see. So because you're rolling the die and you know exactly what you got. So if you just rolled a 10 and you know that you are a big barbarian type of person and you've got lots of attack bonuses on things that are heavy and bludgeony, you know, like a warhammer. You've got a warhammer that would be perfect for an animated skeleton, and you know this. You know that you're a barbarian. You can wield a big warhammer. You know that you've got about 5 bonus points for one reason or another with a hammer. So you know that your roll was 10, but you within this in this situation, those 5 bonus points for being a big barbarian brute who can swing heavy things is perfect, because now you're hitting the skeleton with 15 points, and it looks like a pretty standard skeleton, so you're guessing it's probably susceptible to that kind of damage at that level. And sure enough, it is. And then you get to roll how much damage you've dealt, and you rolled a 19. Literally, I just rolled a 19. So you've just dealt, like, 19 points of damage to this skeleton. In other words, you probably crushed it. So that's, in fact, that might even be a critical, depending on the hammer. So, and you could know that. You would know that information because you would look in your book and you'd look up the which hammer it was that you had, or whatever supplementary material you have about this hammer, and you might see, yes, it crits at 19 and 20. So then you might roll again to see if you would have hit again, and maybe you rolled a 13. And yeah, that would have hit the skeleton, let's say. So then you get to roll, or then the damage that you've just dealt is happens twice. It's twice the amount of damage, so you know that you've just clobbered this thing to just bits and pieces. But you know how all of that works because you see all of the tables, you see all of the numbers, and you see the rolls happen, and you see your bonuses being applied. And in a PC game, I just don't see all of that happening. You know, like you might, if you turn on all the verbosity on, again, let's go with Baldur's Gate because that's the one that's coming to my mind, and I can kind of see that little panel down at the bottom where it kind of tells you, oh, you've just rolled for, checking for traps, and you have found nothing. Okay, but and that's great, and you kind of know. Well, I know that I took an extra skill in trap detection, so that's probably giving me 2 bonus points to my roll. But you're not making that roll, so you're not really sure what that roll was. You know that it was affected by 2, so you know that you've got a, you're doing 2 better than a normal roll, but what was that roll? And what are you even checking against? Like, you're just checking the area? Like, maybe I want to check a specific thing for a trap, and I don't know. It's very sort of ambiguous and kind of hidden, and it's kind of hidden away in the background. It's a background process, I guess. And I mean, for a computer game, you kind of want it to be a background process. You don't really want to have to do everything like you would at a tabletop. But in the tabletop setting, it's a lot different because there's focus. You know, you're not seeing, like in a computer game, you see the entire set, or at least the entire room. It depends on whether they've got like that whole fog of war thing going on where you can only see, within a reasonable amount of distance. But in an RPG, game, you're generally focusing on a set number of things, which is weird because one of the great things about RPGs is that they're limitless. There's no end to the things that you have to deal with. But because it's a narrative and it's being told by the DM, there is a certain amount of things that are sort of within your scope right now. This is what I'm seeing right now. This is what concerns me at this moment. So I'm going to roll against this thing, and we're going to see what the probability is, and we're going to see how the simulation resolves this interaction. And it's so vivid in an RPG, in a tabletop RPG. You really get the sense. Like, if you're into statistics or maths or probability or again, simulation, you're going to love tabletop RPGs because it's all about that sort of thing. So that was the fifth point. Sixth and final point is somewhat related to what I was just talking about, how I said, oh, you have this magical, you're a barbarian, you have this magical hammer that gives you 5 bonus points, and so maybe you look in the book and you see, well, that's the thing, right? Because it's a simulation that we've set up, and we've got all these known values. We know that this substance has this amount of strength to it, and if someone tries to break this substance or something made out of this substance and does not achieve that amount of strength or of power, then it fails. That's going to fail. So it has this DC amount, this difficulty class amount of what someone must overcome in order to accomplish some action for something. And I mean, not obviously not literally everything is listed in the book, right? It doesn't list every single mineral and every single alloy and every single tree type and every single, it doesn't do that, but there is a certain amount of that. There is some of that defined, and then there's the DM who is acting as the arbiter for that sort of thing. Like, well, I've just established that there's this structure in this room, and it looks like it's made out of some known material, so I can reasonably assume that it would have a resistance to being crushed or whatever, or being lockpicked or whatever, to this amount of numbers. And so that DM knows that simulation number, and they may have had to invent it out of something, but it's not invented out of the blue. It's invented out of sort of knowing the world and kind of knowing the level of difficulty within this world, and also possibly from the necessity of the story, because, yes, maybe you need to get into this structure to get some plot item. And so even though traditionally it would take 19 things to get this thing open, we need to nerf it a little tiny bit and make it more like 16, because there's just no way you're doing this otherwise. But you never know. I mean, that's up to the DM. So my point being, we know this – I just went off this huge tangent about simulation again. I just finished that one. So there's this known set of data that we have to kind of go up against, and there's a known set of data that we have to input into the simulation, because there are books that are published by your whoever made the game, right? That's their job. They made the game. They came up with the numbers. And so you've got that in a book. But the cool, cool thing is that because this is a known data set, and because it's open game license as well, I mean, that certainly helps, people can look up all this data and then figure out, okay, well, what we're going to do is we're going to come up with a whole bunch of other things that the original publisher never came up with. Or we're going to take stuff that they came up with and we're going to make weird little tweaks to them and little adjustments and stylize them a little bit and give them new numbers and throw that at the simulation and see what happens. So you don't, you know, when you buy like a Dungeon and Dragon book or a one of the modules that they have, you know, where they're like, oh, it's 1001, or, you know, the monster manual, here's like 1,000 monsters that you might encounter in this world, with all of their stats and all of their strengths and all of their weaknesses. And that's what you get. And this is all part of like this big simulation now. But you don't have to just settle for that. There are other people who can make their own monsters. You can make your own. Your DM might have made some of their own. People can make new spells, new plants, new weapons. Everything gets a number, and all those numbers correspond with, you know, sort of are relative to this known data set, the world that they are going to exist in. So you may find this powerful weapon that gives you some kind of really cool bonus on certain kinds of rolls, and you think, this is going to be amazing. I can take this thing, and I'm going to be invincible. And then you go out into the open world, and you attack some monster that, oh, happens to have a resistance to that. And suddenly, the tables are turned, and the simulation is messing with your head again. And it's a beautiful, beautiful experience. So what I'm trying to say is that there's an extensibility to RPG tabletops that, again, PC games, even with their modding communities, it just doesn't approach it. It cannot approach it. You've got all these little third-party publishers, some of whom are, you know, just one dude in his apartment in Wellington, New Zealand, just, you know, typing stuff at random. And they're putting it out there on the internet, and you can download it, and you can look at it, and you can think, well, that just, it may not even make all that much sense, but it just feels cool, and I'm going to take that Warhammer or that battle axe or that sword or that plant. I'm going to take it into the world, and I'm going to start using it, and I'm going to see what happens with it. And sometimes it works. Sometimes it works really well. Sometimes it fails miserably, but then works well later on. Or sometimes it'll work well, and then against something else, it fails miserably. And sometimes it should have worked perfectly, but you fumble a dice roll, and it goes horribly wrong. It's perfect. It is perfection. That's I guess my seventh point about tabletop RPG that I had not even planned. It just came to my head right now. It is perfect. That's it. Tabletop RPG, perfect. So if you have not played a tabletop RPG, I encourage you to do so. I encourage you to hunt down a gaming group. There are several, actually. There are some that just kind of, they're kind of out there sort of playing in the world. Like you can, I mean, there are obviously lots, but I'm talking very specifically about Dungeons & Dragons Adventure League and also Pathfinder Society is what it's called. So basically, I mean, there's no, if you hear Dungeons & Dragons and you hear Pathfinder, you can basically think, oh, same thing, because Pathfinder is a fork of Dungeons & Dragons. So they've diverged, but they're still basically the same thing. So, if you go to their respective websites, dnd.wizards.com for Dungeons & Dragons or paizo.com for Pathfinder, and look up either Adventure League for Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder Society for Pathfinder, you will very likely, not necessarily, you may very likely find in your local area a regular meetup of these adventures, and they're specifically designed for players to be able to kind of drop in and drop out of just whenever you can go play. So they're not big, long, drawn-out campaigns that last a year. Well, they are long, drawn-out campaigns, but interestingly, you don't have to you don't have to stay with them. You know, you could just play for one session and then never go back. Hopefully, you wouldn't do that. Maybe you would like it and go back. But they're really, really fun, and they're sort of they're very much top-down. Like they're sort of official adventures published by their respective owners, like either by Wizards of the Coast or Paizo for Pathfinder, and they're kind of distributed, and the people running them are somewhat vetted. I mean, there's, you know, they're not just anybody. It's someone who has communicated with the company and said, yes, I would like to be the person in my area to run these sessions. So I mean, obviously it's the real world, so it's going to be mixed bag of success. But generally speaking, these are really high quality games that are being run, and that they do encourage new players, and they encourage low commitment. You don't necessarily have to sign up for this. You know, I'm going to be part of your gaming group for the rest of my life. It's just like, hey, I'm going to come here today and I'm going to play and I'm going to see how I like it. And it's super fun, and it's a lot lower threat. It's less threatening than you might imagine, if you imagine that it's threatening. Some people get a little bit intimidated by it. You know, they think, oh no, I don't want to have to dress up like an elf and go and talk in Elvish. And that's just that doesn't happen like in real life. That might happen on TV. It might happen even on some things online. But in real life, it's just people who sit around a table and they're presented with a problem, and they talk about it, that problem, with each other to figure out the best way for it to be solved, and then they present that idea to the dungeon master, who compares it to the you know, the inputs it into the simulation, and you see what happens. And that's really kind of that's the for me at least, that's the best summary of that process as there is, really. It's not like a lot of people do get sort of, oh, it's role playing. I'm playing a character. I'm blah blah blah. I don't care about any of that stuff. I'm just in it for the simulation, honestly. And so it's, you know, I'll drum up a character, and I'll love the process of building a character and coming up with this sort of set of numbers to feed into the simulation. And I don't mean to be too harsh about it. I mean, it is fun. It is a fun process, and it is imaginative, and it is creative. But you don't have to necessarily, if you don't want to, you don't have to approach it as if though you are expected to be an actor with motivation and feelings and stuff. You can just approach it as like, this is my character, and this is what my character is going to do. They are going to approach this thing, and they are going to hit it with a hammer and see what happens. And then I'm going to roll my die, and then the DM is going to roll a die or tell me something, and we'll just see what happens. It's all about kind of like this process of, give me an imaginary puzzle, let me discuss it with some people. We'll figure out what our character sheets, what our little characters that we're supposed to be playing, what they would do about this situation and what they can do about this situation effectively, and then we'll go in. We'll send everything in and see what happens. And maybe it'll fail. Maybe one of us will die. Not in real life, the character. Who cares? We'll try again from a different angle. It's a lot of fun. It really is. It's a lot of fun. So if you haven't tried it and you are curious about it, do try. And next time I'll be talking about PC games and why they're still relevant.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.